that we have on the agenda is charter schools. And so the first thing that we're going to do is just the standard update. So there's a written report that is provided by the charter school office. Kim Klein, I think she is probably on the line. She's the Associate Secretary, Operations Support, Department of Education. And she provides a written report for us. And so that was provided in advance of the meeting. And we are going to have a dialogue on charter schools more broadly. But the very first thing is, are there any questions for Ms. Klein with respect to the report that was submitted? Okay, I'm going to say, and I, actually, I'm trying to think if there was where this section was. There was something under, I don't know, and I should know this because I was reading it, and I don't remember which section it was when I was clicking on all the links, but there were some changes that were submitted in May of 2022. It might be under the charter school update section. Can just someone talk to that? Was it under the charter school update, Jenna and I?
Are you talking about the enrollment?
Yes.
Policy update? Yeah, that should be talked about.
It was, okay. I just wanted to make sure I was in. Can you just provide a little bit of color on that? And you know what I'm talking about? It was.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you. Kim Klein, Associate Secretary of Operations Support for the Department of Education. So last year, the department wrote and implemented a policy around low enrollment for charter schools, meaning those schools that did not meet their 80% of enrollment by April 1st. Excuse me. And that was to address and really provide consistency and transparency for our charter schools in understanding what would happen. The Delaware Code is really clear that they're required to meet 80% by April 1st, but the department did not have a clear history or track record of taking specific actions when schools did or did not meet on April 1st. And so through some conversations we had, I personally had a number of conversations with Dr. Noble, we implemented on a policy, we shared it with all of our charter schools and really said to them, this is our policy moving forward. We'll implement on this in the first time in the following year. And so we did that this year. The one thing that we found we needed to change, though, in working with legal counsel, both our departing legal counsel, Daryl Parsons, and then Carla as well, was historically the department has not requested the state board's assent to place a school under formal review. And Carla and Daryl put their heads together and came back and suggested that that should be a step, that the department should request the state board's assent to place a school under formal review. So we updated the policy that we implemented last year to reflect that if a school were to not meet 80% on April 1st, it would be our intention to seek the state board's assent for a formal review, assuming no other significant factors played in.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for board members with respect to that? Anyone on the line?
Just a question in terms of logistics. Does that present any issues for resolving the formal review process with a school by adding the additional layer of having to notice it for the state board, for us to have to provide some commentary on it, and then for it to go back to the secretary? Are there any concerns about that? Or is that just something that would not really present any issue to timeliness and resolution of that that issue?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Wally. Thank you. So it definitely builds in a little extra time for us. But frankly, with legal counsel's advice, we think it's a necessary step. And so what the department would have to do moving forward is ensure that we build a schedule around CSAC and formal review that allows for that opportunity, and then still make sure we use the best time of that formal review period, making sure we meet all the statutory time requirements, but that we still do kind of our due diligence in building time in for students and families in the event a formal review were to lead to closure.
Thanks, that's helpful.
Your comments. Great. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate the background on that. So the next item that we have on the agenda is really to walk through, and I think it's listed on the agenda, potential process, statutory or regulatory updates. And one of the major responsibilities of the board is the approval of new applications, renewals, major modifications for charter schools. We've spent an awful lot of time this year, and there's a lot that have come before us. And as we've talked about this, we really thought that there's always an opportunity for improvement. You know, the legislation has been around for a long time, and some things are working really well, and some things maybe could work better, just as with anything. So given that we've kind of put everything to bed this year, we thought it would be, or for this year, we thought it'd be a really good time to have a dialogue amongst board members, what they think works and what doesn't, through the CSAC process. And there's been a lot in the news lately, and we just had a lot of different things that came before us. So we have several members that have served this year or in prior years on the CSAC process. So their input, I think, is really valuable. And then also, you know, from a teacher standpoint, and just those of us that look at it from a little bit of a perspective that maybe takes a step back, I think it's just really important that this be just an open conversation about what do we think is working and where do we think improvements could be made. To that end, we really wanted to make sure that we are including people that work really closely with charter schools. So Kendall Massett's here tonight, and thank you, by the way, for coming in person. We do appreciate that. Kendall is the executive director of the Charter School, Delaware Charter School Network, and we asked her to come. So rather than just provide a public comment at the end where we have to time her, although we are still on the clock a little bit tonight, I throw that out there. But we really wanted to hear from you, because I know that you obviously are a supporter of charter schools, and this isn't about whether we think they're good or bad. This is simply about there's always room for improvement, and we'd just like to have some perspective from you, just kind of, you know, a few, some comments. Then we're going to open it up to the board to have a dialogue, ask questions, and you are a resident expert, so we may call on you to answer some questions.
Where would you like me to do that from here?
Or you could do it. Jenna, is there, like, I don't know where we are in terms of, like, being shown on screen. Is there a place you could sit that people could see her, or do you just want to sit?
Yeah, if you come up to this front table here.
And thank you. We do appreciate your being here tonight.
Absolutely. I came dressed for the occasion. Actually, I didn't dress for you. I dressed for a rally. We had a rally. We had 500 charter students in Dover today. So, sorry, I wore my charter outfits. I did make remarks so that I would stay with them.
Jenna is really good about telling people how long they can talk. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Although she does it because I asked her to. So it's not Jenna, it's me.
Jenna's known me a long time. She knows she has to put me on the clock. So again, good evening. I'm Kendall Massett. I'm the executive director of the Delaware Charter Schools Network. And a huge thank you to the State Board of Education for allowing me to make comment and hopefully be part of an informative and fruitful conversation. As you know, the charter school law was written and passed in 1995. In 1996, our first two charter schools, Positive Outcomes Charter School and the Charter School of Wilmington, opened with a combined 296 students. Since that time, we have grown to 23 charter schools in operation this year with 17,201 students and one charter that was just approved by you to open in the fall of 2023. In that time, we have had 34 charters granted and 10 closed. Before I comment about existing processes and potential for them to improve, I want to acknowledge that it is really hard when a school closes. It really is. No one likes it, but what we like even less are children in a failing school. That does not mean, however, that you don't authorize more. It just means that the process needs to be better. That doesn't mean that the processes we have right now are necessarily bad. Just because those schools closed, it doesn't mean the process was bad. Great ideas and really smart people that care deeply about students have had charters approved, but then for whatever reason, they don't work. And no one likes to hear me say this, but I say it a lot. If it's not working, it is your responsibility to turn in your charter and stop. You are not doing what you promised to do. You shouldn't be doing it. This also doesn't mean that you try to minimize these failures. You can't make policy or change processes because you're afraid of failure. Our teachers know that. All that said, there's always room for improvement with anything in life. So I wanted to talk about that. The department over the last 10 years actually has done a really good job of updating the process within the confines of the law that we already have. So just a note, since 1995, our law has been modified 134 times, and only 9 years out of the last 27 years have we not changed or modified the charter law. Most recently, the ability to send questions beforehand to the applicants and give the applicant time to answer and return before the committee is a really good thing. But one of the biggest concerns that our community has is this heavy push of making our schools check the same boxes as districts. To be clear, our schools are more transparent than our district counterparts. That does not mean that our district counterparts are trying to hide anything. It just means that our law requires it. Our schools have an independent financial audit done every year. And when we go through this charter process, we have to answer questions about our curriculum, our teaching methods, our governance structure, our outreach, our enrollment policies and practices, and our financials. But that's a good thing. In fact, in a recent House Education Committee, one of the board members said, it's like being put through a meat grinder, but it's good because it makes us come out stronger on the other side. But we don't ask those same questions of our districts. Maybe we should. The box checking that I'm talking about is also not the health and safety of children or our ability to meet the needs of children with special needs. It's about our leaders and our staff looking and being just like district staff. The push on certification and licensing that doesn't really fit our mold is possibly a problem, because we might be counting out some incredible leaders and staff that can and are doing amazing work that will positively impact the lives of students. The process needs to be more fluid, though, with these leaders. So you should have a conversation with them. Ask them about their vision. We do some of that, but it's less of a conversation and more of a check the box. Ask them what their vision is. Ask them to tell you why they are the right person for that and why their staff is the right for that. What work are they doing or have they done that can actually do great things for students? And the other piece that's missing, especially for modifications, from this group here, you guys need to be in the schools. I know it's not part of the public record, but if you're not in there looking at what they're doing and seeing it, you really can't make a good decision. You're listening to what they're saying, but you're not seeing how it's done. And again, I know it's because it's the record and your lawyers would tell you you can't go there, but maybe you can. We need to figure out how to make it happen, because you're making a decision that is going to affect the lives of children. And if you're not there seeing it, how can you really make a good decision? And then finally, for new charters, the one item that we hear about is impact. And guess what? That's the point. We're supposed to impact the lives of children, and that could impact our districts. Okay. But we're working together with our districts. I know you see all the hype out there that we hate each other. We don't. We do a lot of work together. But that has become the talking point. And so I ask, we always talk about the positive impact first and think about the negative impact later, because positive, I believe, outweighs the negative. So the fact is that none of this is easy, but that's okay when we're talking about children. This work isn't supposed to be easy, but it is worthwhile.
Thank you very much. And I am going to open it up to the board just for questions and comments. And I do think that you should be a part of the dialogue, quite honestly. And I'm very open about that. There are some things that I agree with you on, some of the things you said and some of the things I don't. And I'm sure Carlo will tell us, no, don't visit a school while we're under review. But that doesn't mean we can't visit other times. And, you know, I know Vince was actually, visiting on the school just this week. And I know he'll talk about that. But I think it is important. So really, this is just a time. And I do think that it's important to say that no one is sitting here saying that the process isn't working and that it's broken. And I'm going to give the Charter School Office and Department of Education a lot of credit because they did a lot of work, I think, kind of before many of us were on the board in terms of making it a lot more stringent in order to actually go through those hoops. And so the applications actually did drop because they weren't robust enough before. So I think that's really important. So I do want to be really clear. This isn't about saying that it's not working and that it's a system that's broken. It's about saying, how can we make it better? Mm-hmm. I have no idea in terms of how many changes have been made from a legislative standpoint. I'm sure there's tweaks all over the place. I can't speak to that. All I can speak to is the process that we sit on and things that we see. And the only thing that I am going to actually, and I have to say this, is I think that we have to look at some of, and it's not necessarily the bad, but it's, if you think about it as a three-legged stool, like it just doesn't work if one of those legs doesn't work. So it can look wonderful up top, but if one of those is like held up with glue, it really doesn't matter how wonderful the top looks. If you sit on it, you're still on the floor. So we have to make sure those three legs all work. And that's what this process is. So with that, I'm going to open it up to board members, but I just want to be clear. You're a part of the dialogue and it's not broken. We just know we can be better.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm going to open it up and Dr. Noble is not here. And you know, she obviously has a lot of thoughts on this issue. And I think she sent some stuff over, but to be honest, I think she thought she was going to, she's sick. So, and not feeling well. So she was really hopeful she was going to be online. And then she texted as I was driving down that she couldn't. So I think she put some comments together, but I personally haven't had a chance to review them. And I don't want to just like read them without actually knowing what I'm supposed to read and not read. Jenna might have talked to her. So I'm going to leave that to Jenna. But with that, I'm going to open it up just for, this is just a conversation. Because nothing happens if we don't start the conversation.
Madam President, if I may go first, I want to thank Kendall for making herself available and be willing to discuss a lot of the different topics that get thrown in with the evaluation and the charter school processes. Quite frankly, I probably have issues with the process also, not necessarily charter schools, quite honestly. Yes, I did have the opportunity to go to Eastside Charter today and speak with Mr. Bass. I had a wonderful time. The students were so good, I thought they were out of Central Casting, that he maybe hired them from the Screen Actors Guild. And I feel a sort of an emotional tie because originally I was from Northeast Wilmington. And I can, talking about collaboration, I can see, you know, what they're doing with the Eastside Rising community, with Logan Herring's organization, tied to the new public housing, and certainly reaching out to partnerships like with getting major funding from Chemours and from also Barclays Bank. So one of the things I was told, oh, if we're going to consider a school, a charter in the immediate future, don't visit because that they might feel that you're trying to in some way, you might be unduly influenced. So I try to be as objective as possible. But the process is, I've always felt that the process may be the way CSAC is organized. And I'm not trying to get Kim upset with me. It seems to be a lot of folks from the Department of Education, where I'm sure there should be, where else would you get them? But maybe there should be some more community people from the business community, and also maybe from the local communities that are going to be there to speak about the charter school. I think I saw a lot of that with the Stevenson School. I thought that was tremendous, absolutely tremendous. I don't necessarily think that asking questions is negative. I voted for the charter and school bill, and I voted for school choice. And quite frankly, maybe we didn't do a real good job initially the way we structured everything, but we had to get started at some point in time, and we did. The other thing is the charter school office. Once again, it has nothing to do with you, Kendall. I feel in many respects they're understaffed. The charter school office, and we have all these, I believe, five critical charter schools in Wilmington. We have a staff of four people. I believe we probably should have a charter school person assigned in the city of Wilmington, working with Mr. Simmons and other kinds of resources that we have at the Department of Education. Now, having said all that, I guess, I apologize if I'm, is this like a filibuster? One of the things I've noted, at least Kim smiled, one of the things I've noted is sometimes I get this sense of hostility from you. A couple months ago, I believe that either you or Dr. Newton, and I know you don't really look alike, said that we were hostile or we were enemies of the charter school movement sitting right in this room. And I think he meant at the State Board of Education room. And I guess I just, as someone who has always voted to affirm, there's been the secretary's recommendation, I guess I kind of got put off by that comment. And I'm not an overly sensitive guy, really. So just tell me about this hostile environment that you're facing with this state board or maybe CSAC or whatever. Or did I misunderstand that?
Yeah, so I don't remember. I know I didn't say it, but I will say this. So what we've been dealing with actually, but nationally as well as here, is that, so legislation comes out, I noted 134 changes, only nine out of 27 years, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is actually taking away the flexibility that charter schools have. If you want us to be innovative, then we have to be flexible. We say, hold us accountable, right? But the part of the hostility that we've been feeling recently, one, the charter moratorium, you all know there was a bill, right, that was put out there to stop charter schools. There was also part of that, a bill that said, well, we have to create this task force to look at changing the law because it's never been updated. 134 times mm-hmm. it's been updated. And we're coming out of a pandemic. I'll tell you, that's a part of it. A big part of mm-hmm. what we're feeling is we're coming out of a pandemic and we have teachers and students and staff that are overworked and they just want to teach kids. But every time we turn around, it feels like every time we turn around, there's one more thing that's okay. being thrown at us, right? And the most recent, and I will say, being on the professional standards board meeting, there were some comments that were made about our schools that I didn't think were appropriate or legitimate. Just because a leader or an administrator doesn't have a license or certification to meet the idea of what a traditional district school looks like, leader looks like, that doesn't mean that our leaders and administrators that aren't licensed and certified are bad people or that they're not doing their great job.
Yeah.
Vince, it's kind of just been like that. We felt like we're under attack, right? And so that might be what you were feeling or hearing, right? That us feeling that, that's what you were hearing. And I will tell you, so you all know, like, so we've lost, we are losing an incredible Black male educator
right.
from our state.
Absolutely, yep.
Nate Durant is leaving Freire and he is going to Philadelphia. And that was because there was a lot of stuff that was out there that was being thrown at Freire. And I don't think all of that was warranted. And so that was a lot probably what you were hearing too.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Massett. And open dialogue, Madam President, just to continue for a couple more minutes and I promise I'll be quiet.
No, actually that's why we're doing this. So
looking at what occurred with the Christina School District and their resolution, quite frankly, the State Board of Education from that point forward approved a new school, a new charter with Stevenson, who did a phenomenal job. Mm-hmm. approved a major modification for the Academia, and which went into the Christina School District. So I think that if anything, and then looking at the licenses and certifications, I believe our Secretary Holodeck said, hey, he heard what was being said, but he was going to be carrying a light stick on that. In other words, he wasn't going to be using that as something to beat down charter school leadership. He would figure it out. And I have perfect confidence that he will. So and speaking of Freire, we know that they then withdrew their, as a result of this, felt maybe some of this hostility or whatever, that they withdrew their charter application. But having said that, you know what we did. You know, we approved the charter school for Christina School District, and we approved the new charter school with Bass. So I think what we did was fine, and I really doesn't follow along with that. But here's my question. Why did Freire, what's the reason why they pulled their application? Was it just because of hostility, or is there something else that I should know? Or we should know as a board, make sure we're doing our job.
I don't think I can.
Mr. Lofink, I think we should not answer that question. And Ms. Massett is not a representative for Freire, and we've already closed that record for this year.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And it's not the first time you've told me not to say something. Thank you very much. I hear that a lot. Ms. Massett, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time to answer our questions. And I'm sure that I am merely a mild substitute for Dr. Noble. And once again, I appreciate it. And thank you for giving me this opportunity, Madam President.
Thank you. And actually, if I can follow up on that, and Carly, you're going to have to tell me if I'm allowed to do this or not.
All right.
And I'm not going to ask Kendall to answer that question because she can't, right? Like, that's not her job. And she can't speak for someone else. But I'm going to talk about the CSAC process, and that was public, and they were a part of it. And I'm now speaking out of turn because I'm speaking to some degree based on information that I heard from our CSAC representatives around the response to some of the questions that they asked. And this is me, so I'm repeating things that I've heard. So, you know, to the extent I repeat them wrong, then that's on me. But I believe there was a sense of that we weren't allowed to ask questions. It wasn't our place to ask some questions. And I'm going to stop there. And then when we found answers that made us go, let's ask a second question, because that doesn't make sense. And you end up down a little bit of, and I don't want to call it a rabbit hole, because I think they were important holes that we went down. But I do believe that it might be Freire, it might be a different school. But there's a sense of who does the state board think they are asking those questions? At the end of the time, I mean, end of the day, like, we approve them. So if they fail, that's on us. So to some degree, I think that we're within our right to ask questions about financials, to ask questions about grants that have been given, to understand really what those finances are, and not be put in a position that if you're asking those questions, there's an ulterior motive. The ulterior motive is that we have solid schools, right? Like, that's what we have to do. So I'm just saying, and, you know, I know, unfortunately, Dr. Noble's not here. Mr. Lofink, you can actually chime in on top of me if I'm stating anything that you would disagree with. But I do think there's a very real sense of that hostility that seems to have permeated this particular round of charter schools, has been a sense of, why are you asking those questions? And to me, I think that we would be remiss in our responsibilities if we did not ask those questions. Is that fair?
Madam President, I agree, and I'm the one, I think, who used the term hostility, but so did Ms. Massett. It may have just been the stress and pressure of trying to get all the modifications in a new charter school done at one time, but obviously there seemed to be some disconnect. And I can remember Ms. Klein even saying, a few times at a meeting. We're not a rubber stamp. We're not a rubber stamp. And that may have in the charter school process. And that may have easily come from me because I remember saying, we don't want to necessarily be a rubber stamp for CSAC either. If we see something, we feel something is wrong, or if we feel a question has not been appropriately answered. But I do sense, I think it maybe deals with this hostility, some sense of hostility that maybe both sides felt. But maybe Ms. Klein has a better sense or better feel for it than I do, or maybe Ms. Massett has a better sense or feel than I do on this. But I agree with you, Madam President.
I would just like to chime in just one more time. And as far as we're talking about comments to improve the process, I think that those are helpful comments for the CSAC committee to look to help the SBE understand what the scope of what the record looks like, what kind of questions can be asked, what kind of outside investigations might be able to be done, who's it being done by. I think those are all very, very valid points to talk about with the procedure going forward.
Thank you. I don't want to spend time digging in on one school. Like, that's not the purpose of this.
Yeah.
But I do think, and I'm glad that Mr. Lofink brought that up, because I do think our ability to ask questions and, you know, to Mr. Arce's point, what is the right venue for those and who takes those questions further? And this gets back to the whole concept of what is the makeup of CSAC? Because I think that the charter school office really falls in a really uncomfortable position of essentially being the support network, right? Like, they want these schools to succeed, but then they also have to sit over them and then, you know, be the person who decides if they're working or not. And that's a bit of a challenging position. I think they have to balance. So just, again, this is nothing comes out of today. It's really just a conversation. And then we have conversations about, you know, what could be done differently. But just thinking about the dual role they play, and, you know, I think it was brought up that there are only 4 people. I think that was the number of 5 people. A really small office with a lot of responsibility. So that's one hat that they potentially, you know, that they're having to juggle.
Can I say that the one great thing that has happened over the last 10 years that I've been doing this is that the collaboration and the support between the charter school office and the network, because we also get that is a really tense place to be, right? You have to, especially when we move to this, the idea of the department being a support agency, which is good, right? But it's really hard to be the compliance, you making sure that you're compliant, and at the same time finding ways to support. So having a connection and a collaboration between the network and the resources that we can provide and the charter school office has been really helpful, I think, to be able to figure out where that tension best lies. And I've been really close with the state board for years as well. Different over the years, right? And how do we help you be a strong authorizer? You should ask the questions. You should. Absolutely should be asking the questions. How do we help be that resource? How does that, because the charter community, we don't want schools to close. We just want to do great things for kids. How do we work together with the largest authorizer in our state? Right? You authorized 21 of our 23 charter schools, 22 of our 24 charter schools. How do we work together to do great things for all kids? And so I appreciate that you're asking these questions now and trying to think through how better your role is. But yes, they have 4 people in that office, which are great. 2 of which actually worked in charter schools and were a principal and a leader. So they get this plan. But that's why we try to be good partners, right? The network tries to be a good partner with them. We talk about our schools all the time, and we talk about the things that are going on, and is it something that the department can do? Or is it something the department needs to not be a part of? Not that they wouldn't be looking, but that they're not out there saying, do these things. Where can the network go? find resources and plug in. And so it's a balance, but we make it work.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And I'm sure that the charter school office does as well. I know that I so far we've really only, I've kind of come on the back of what Mr. Loafing said. So Mr. Loafing, do you have anything you want to add? Or I want to make sure that everybody has a chance to have, if they have questions, if they don't have questions or comments. So
I just wanted to make one more comment. I know that I think it was back in December or it may have been January that I may have ruffled some feathers because I asked said to the board at that meeting that we had to be cautious. And at that time, I listed charter school failures, but of course they are not of recent vintage. And I believe Ms. Massa did correct me that, you know, that some of that was really ancient history, but maybe I was a little too misspoke or sounded hostile at the time, but what I wanted us to realize that these were very, very important decisions. And we had approved two major modifications in the last couple, 3 years to have charter schools then close within a 6-month period. And I think I was trying to get that message across. So that's the spirit in which I meant it. So thank you very much, Madam President, Ms. Massett.
No, thank you. And I do think that's a really good point because to Kendall's point, we want charter schools that work, but they don't always work and they may fail. Like they're, if you're leaving a bad school, to your point, you don't want to leave a kid in a bad school, but if you're leaving a bad school and you're going to a bad school that isn't delivering, that bad school that isn't delivering shouldn't exist. Like it just shouldn't. So I'm just gonna leave it there for now. I'm gonna open it up to everybody else who wants to have any kind of part of this conversation.
I'd like to make a couple of comments. First off,
can you pronounce your name just for anyone who's on the line? Sorry.
Sure. This is Wally Rushdan. Can you all hear me clearly?
We can. Sorry. I should have just introduced you myself, but anyway.
That's fine. So first off, I just want to acknowledge how much I appreciate the fact that we're having this conversation. I think it's a really, really important conversation that has been long overdue in this particular format to allow it to materialize and have a true back and forth about it. Ms. Massett made a comment towards the end of her last round of remarks where she talked about the importance of collaboration and that really this is what this is all about and what good things that can come from that. And I couldn't agree more. There's no need for us to experience the different bodies that have a role in this charter school experience to feel like we're at loggerheads. But I do think it is important that we acknowledge we have different roles. We wear different hats. Mm-hmm. You know, as it's charter school network, you know, it's as an advocate. You know, we have responsibilities to ask questions and dispatch our responsibilities with fidelity. And shame on us if we're not doing it with a sense of commitment and intention to find out and ask the right questions, find out the answers. And I'm proud of the fact that we have people on our board who care enough to engage the work in a serious manner such that those questions are asked. And I do think it is important that everybody respects everybody's role in this. Mm-hmm. Again, everyone, you know, our role is not as an advocate in this process.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that in our private lives, you know, we all go home to a community. I can say that I'm very proud of the fact that I've been in every single charter school that is in the city of Bloomington and been there on some schools several times. To that point, I do think that we need to look at our process. We need to find some way to make sure that part of our process includes some access to schools. Again, it's not currently in the process, but that's why we're having this conversation. I do think that's a major missed opportunity, and we need to find a way to incorporate that, because I think what that does on the other side is I can see from the charter school community how there's some sense of umbrage to the idea of you're making decisions that impact our school community, and you're missing a part of the puzzle in terms of the experience of what we actually do, how we deliver on the very flat, lifeless information you see on paper, which again, I think is objective, and we need to make decisions on objective information. But I think that that's a key part of what we do. I'll also go back to a comment that Mr. Lofink made about, you know, when this law was first passed, and you know, I heard Ms. Massa talk about how many times there has been some modifications to it. This is the evolving process. I think that really good things have come out of our discussions, and we may need to tinker with it even more to make it a better process, to carry out the intentionality, which is to ensure that we have you know, schools that are going to be successful, that are going to have the best opportunity, because we can't guarantee what's going to happen in the future, but at least from our process, we know that when we approve a school, we're doing it with great information to suggest to us that this school is going to have success. So you know, I am very much looking forward to continuing this conversation, because it really should be a spirit of collaboration. And we need to make sure that we reduce the barriers to mistrust, which can easily be developed when there's a lack of this type of dialogue and a lack of connectivity, which I don't think connectivity reduces your objectivity. I think it you know, we can all dispatch with our responsibilities in the appropriate manner, even with more connectivity, even with more discussion, and yes, even with being in a school and seeing it firsthand and talking with the administrators in that environment. So thank you.
No, thank you. Those are very good points. Anyone else?
I would like to piggyback off a little bit of what Wally said. I wasn't initially going to speak in this issue just because, like, I'm very new to the whole thing. I haven't been here for most of this. I didn't feel as though I was knowledgeable enough on charter schools to talk about it, but I do feel like like for this conversation, there needs to be an outsider perspective. And I mean outsider as someone who wasn't there for the majority of this. I'm 16 years old. I have not been here that long. But hearing this conversation tonight, I think that there has been a lot of miscommunications over the past, what was it, 25 years that this has been going on. There's been a lot of miscommunications just because we're all coming from very different places. We all have very different roles in this, as Wally was saying, but we do have one shared common goal, and that's to make a safe school environment for our students and to find the best way to help them. And I think that as we're making these decisions, we really need to take that into consideration. We all have different roles. We're all coming from different backgrounds. We all have different perspectives and different biases that we're bringing in. And I think that's caused a little bit of the tension that people have been speaking on earlier. But I think if we shed those biases and those previous experiences and those kind of tensions that we felt in the past and just come in with a new conversation and have more conversations like this, then we'll be able to have less hostility in, I don't like that word. I'm not using that word. Hostility makes it sound like this is an argument, and it's not, it's conversation. Less tension as we're having these conversations in the future, and we will all be able to grow and hopefully grow the charter school system, like, long term.
That was very well said. I'm glad you decided to speak up today. And just because you're only 16 and you haven't been here when Vince voted on this a little while ago, it doesn't mean your views are any less worth listening to. So thank you for sharing, and I think that was excellent. I'm glad you did. Anyone else? Okay. I'm sorry, Vince is going like this. So can you not?
I thought Ms. Klein was speaking, but she may have been talking to somebody in her family. Okay, I get it. Sorry. And Wally, can I borrow your brain sometime? You're unbelievable.
Yeah, Wally's always a very tough act to follow, because thank you for sharing that, Wally. Yeah, he always says things so eloquently.
And our student representative, I can remember when I was 16. My Lord. I didn't leave like my surrounding 4 or 5 blocks, and she's speaking before the State Board of Education and is an active member. It's scary.
And I get to be her advocate. I'm just saying.
That is true. That's true. Now, I know that that Audrey's not here, and she did. Dr. Noble had a lot of thoughts. Jenna, you hear from all of us on a regular basis. You field our questions. I will say, Rowan has put together some great data. And again, this is just information. So there are, again, kind of to your point and to Wally's point, the benefit of being in a school. And actually, I commend you, Wally. I didn't know that you'd visited all of them, so I'm quite impressed by that. And I mean, all the Wilmington that you mentioned in terms of visiting the schools. And there is something to be said for that. And we've been invited sometimes, and then we've been, you know, we can't go during that process. So certainly, as we think about how do we make a change going forward, maybe that's something we can change. I don't know. Legal counsel will advise on that, and there'll be a dialogue. But Jenna listens to everything, so I'm going to go back to her. Are there things that we have left out? And I feel like there have, because I know we talked about this in the fall when we were asked to kind of weigh in. So I know some things have been left out. Are there any things that you want to hit on? And again, this is the beginning, and I know Dr. Noble will want to weigh in. So is there anything that has been like blatantly missed?
I do have Dr. Noble's statement here, and I don't want to read it, but I think that it's sort of relevant to a lot of the conversation that we had already. And so I'd like to kind of introduce the concept. I think it aligns with some of my thoughts. And then she can talk about it in more depth at a future meeting. But she did share that as she thinks about the CSAC process, that she's interested in revisiting that because she thinks the CSAC process attempts to simultaneously be both formative and summative, and that CSAC is tasked with providing support to help charter schools to improve while also at the same time making a decision about holding schools accountable. And so maybe it is worth kind of revisiting the role and the process and the stages of how we look at charter schools, so that as we're collecting information, that there is a space for the department to have that dialogue with the schools around the supports. And it's not happening necessarily at the same time as the accountability piece of the conversation when we're actually making decisions about next steps for a school, whether it be a renewal, a major modification, or whatever. I agree with that statement. I think we, as a group, as this board, you all have talked a lot about using data to inform your decisions. That's why Berlin has been pulling together some of this data to help us have that. I know that I've fielded a lot of questions around charter school data in the last year that I've pulled myself. And so I think intentionally incorporating some of that data and making it easy to understand as part of the process would be really helpful. And I think that sort of tightening the timelines around when we expect different things. So in the regulations, there are a lot of different products that are required throughout the year. There's the frameworks, there's the annual report, there's a performance agreement, there's a charter contract, right? There's all of these things. How can we make sure that we're using those in a way that helps us to effectively carry forward the work? So that it works best for everyone, for the charters, for the department, for the board. So that's sort of my high level thoughts on that, is just as we kind of revisit the regulations, a lot of that is outlined in there. And so the regulation has not been updated since 2014. It is due to be updated. So I think now would be a good time to revisit that as well.
Anything else from her comments, or is that it?
Can I suggest something to what you just said? So the department recently worked with a group to bring in Epicenter, which is a platform to combine all those things. There's a whole bunch more that are required of our schools. And it actually goes to taking away the ability for leaders to actually be in their classrooms. I think sometimes we forget that even though our charters are each a local education agency, we actually don't have district offices and district personnel. The leader wears 72 different hats and they have to do all these things. And many times it's all the things that are listed in regulation, and they have all these different due dates, and we get asked for them by different department pieces of the department. And so, because there's sometimes some silos there, which I believe Secretary Holodick is working on breaking those down, which appreciate that. But Epicenter actually will hopefully help break some of that down. And the group that's working with the department to bring that in is the National Charter Schools Institute. They work with authorizers and boards just like yours across the country. And they're looking at our law and our regulations and going, "Woo, hey, you guys ask for a lot of things at different times and it's overlapping." And so they're helping the charter school office look through that so that when it's all uploaded into Epicenter One, it'll be in like a dashboard for the department and the state board to look at it. So you can see all the charters across that. And it's the idea is that it's supposed to make it easier for charter schools. Just like with anything else, the implementation is a little rocky, but we're getting there. I have great faith that Epicenter will be a great tool for the authorizer as well as our charter schools. And it gets to exactly what Jenna's talking about, because all of those things that are asked for, you see how many of them are there and asked for. And that's one piece, and that will help with the regulation and looking at what is really necessary. What is it you're asking for? Do you really need all of that? Or could we just ask for this one thing and it covers all of it? So I think that the department is on a really good track to help with this. And hopefully once that starts to get implemented, more, they'll be able to show you and talk to the state board about it. I think you should be part of that conversation and you should see it. And I think that this dashboard, I hope that this dashboard will be helpful for all parties.
That's good information. Thank you for sharing that. Anything else?
Conversation.
No, this has been great. And I am so appreciative that you said remove the word hostile. And no, Vince, you're not the one that started it. You repeated it, so somebody else threw it out there. But it was a challenging, and I don't think we were brought into it quite as much, but it was definitely in the news. And I do think that that was a really good point, because, and that's why I wanted you to be here tonight, because you have to be a part of the conversation. And I do believe, and I think it was Wally that brought up the word collaboration, because you really work better when you work together. So I think this was good. I know there's a lot of takeaways. This is probably just the beginning of the conversation, really, in all honesty. But we've already learned something, Epicenter. And if that actually solves one of the problems that are out there, like, that's really valuable. So with that, I'm going to say thank you to all the board members that shared your thoughts and your comments, particularly you, Shelby. So thank you for that. And thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you so very much for having me here. I really appreciate it. It is a conversation and we're here for it. Whenever you need, I'll bring other leaders, whatever you want, or I'll just come if you don't want. If Mr. Lomfink doesn't want anybody else but me, I'm good there too.
Yeah, he hasn't, I'm going to speak.
Vince and I know.
He goes out there and he's in the schools.
So. I'm teasing him. He and I have a history of teasing each other. So I hopefully he heard that in the spirit in which it was meant.
No, but thank you. And thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And that was definitely more than your allotted 5 minutes.
I know, I'm sorry.
I'm teasing. But thank you for coming. All right, so, and thank you everyone for that conversation. So next on our agenda is regulations. We do have, okay, so we're doing education first. So Department of Education is first. So this is for information, regulation 915, James H. Grove High School. And we have Miss Maureen Whalen and then Miss Emily Cunningham for the information on Reg 915.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Sorry, there was a little bit of a delay on my end. So I'm here before you tonight with Regulation 915, which is the James H. Groves High School. Pursuant to 14 Delaware Code, Section 122B18, the Delaware Department of Education developed an amendment to 14 Delaware Admin Code 915, James H. Groves High School. This regulation provides for the operation of James H. Groves High School, an adult education high school. In June 2021, subsection 2.2 of the regulation was amended concerning the age of a student in the in-school credit program. The amendment specified that it would be in effect until June 30th, 2022, as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. The department has determined that the change should remain in effect for the 2022-2023 school year, and as a result, it has proposed to strike the date of June 20, 2022 from subsection 2.2. And we brought this before you the last time for clarification. And I do have Maureen Whalen, who I can see down there, in case anybody has any questions about the regulation.
I do have one question. And this actually also relates, I think, to one that PSB brought. And I asked the whole concept of you're not allowed to sunset in regulations anymore. So if you had to do it last year for 1 year and now you have to remove it, what are the implications of that? Is this a 1 year thing and then it goes back to the way it used to be? What happens if it just is like forever? What can you talk to that?
When we're talking about this, what we'd like to do is leave it on forever after this point. We did it for 1 year to see if it was a pilot and if it would work. I think I provided the state board, and clearly if you have any questions, please ask, with the data on what ended up happening. We've had over 100 students so far, and we've had a pass rate of 73%. And I think what we're doing here in allowing 14 or 15 year olds to come into Groves Adults High School and still stay as part of the K-12 system is providing the K-12 system and the students with additional abilities to get back on credit. And so they'd be able to graduate with their cohort. And in answer to your question, it worked last year. It's working now if you look at the data. So we'd like to be able to continue that on.
Okay, so this isn't just for one more year.
Right.
That's what I was confused, because when you said 22-23 school year, I was thinking it was just for one more year. So this is just a permanent change.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you. That was a really helpful explanation. And the fact that you're seeing such good results is really positive. So thank you for that.
Our pleasure.
Any other questions or comments on this one? Okay. And this is just information. So we'll be coming up in front of us for a vote next month. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So the next one, we're on to Professional Standards Boards regulation. We have Dr. Linnea Bradshaw, Executive Director of Professional Standards Boards. We have several on front of us. So the first one is for action regulation 1565, world language teacher.
Hello, can everybody hear me?
We can, thank you.
Okay, wonderful. 1565 world language teacher, we are proposing a change in the proficiency requirement for world language teachers from advanced low to intermediate high. This is proposed to be a temporary change. The board, in their motion to forward this, has decided that they are going to revisit this in the spring of 2024. The regulation was published on April 1st. It received no comments and was forwarded to the board by the PSB at its May meeting. Are there any questions?
Yes, I just want to make sure I understand, because I had a lot of questions on this the last meeting, because mm-hmm. they were public comments, because there was somebody that some of the comments were, we need to do this because kids can't go study abroad during COVID, so they don't learn languages. And then there was a concern around, well, that means that we've now lowered the standard for our foreign language teachers because they didn't get to go study abroad. And then the way it was written, because we're not allowed to sunset anything, it was in perpetuity for, we decided maybe like 5 kids, right? Maybe 5 to 10 kids, but we didn't have a hard number. So what did you just change? Is it being written? And I'm sorry, like, I just want to make sure I understand. So this, do we just think, like, do we just say, okay, in 2 years, someone's going to take a look at this? Or is it written such that in 2 years it changes?
I mean, it is not written that in 2 years it changes because of the sunset issue for regulations. It is written that it is reflected in our minutes that the PSB will revisit this issue in the spring of, by March of 2024, I believe.
Can you refresh my memory as to who it was that weighed in with the comments around the concerns around the fact that we were reducing the standards for foreign language teachers?
I think you're talking about Gregory Fulkerson, who is the World Language Ed Associate at the Department of Education. He did weigh in at the professional, when the Professional Standards Board was first considering this for publication, which was, I believe, at their March meeting. He weighed in on this and said that he objected to a permanent change. And
we're making a permanent change with the idea that in the minutes in 2 years, someone will revisit it.
Yes. I mean, I mean.
I just wanted to clarify.
Yes, he did.
I want to understand what it is we're actually doing. We are making a permanent change under the understanding that in 2 years, somebody will revisit it.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
Madam President, real quick, and the language is in all of the three regulations that we're going to be hearing tonight, and I don't want to be silly. It just hit me as I was reading through all of them. 3.2, section 3.2, issuance of standard certificate, where it says, notwithstanding any provision, et cetera, it talks about disloyalty. Do you know which section? And I just kind of wanted to get a bearing on what it, and maybe Mr. Rushing can help me in within that context, what disloyalty means.
Well, disloyalty is anything that is a lack of loyalty to an employer. But if you look at the place where it stands, is that the department will not act on an application for licensure if someone is under investigation. And it's one of the things someone could be under investigation for. Right. It's not something that the department makes a judgment on someone's being disloyal. It is if there is an active investigation from someone, maybe from another state or jurisdiction, who is applying for licensure in the state of Delaware. And that is one of the things that is that is a possible thing that they could be under investigation for.
Okay. And I get, I
and disloyalty, to define the term, it because it's not defined, it would be the very standard dictionary term of.
Okay. I remember a case a couple of years ago, somebody from Pennsylvania was in the Department of Education, was also working for the Department of Education in Ohio at the same time. And we're getting away with it, I guess, in the internet age. And that's what I gleaned from that, that it was something like that, as opposed to you cheated on your girlfriend when you were a sophomore in college or something like that.
That's correct. Yes.
Got it.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions or comments? All right, I do have one more. Sorry. I'm just hung up on this permanent thing.
I know.
Do you have any examples of where things have been? Like, I don't know. I just think we are a whole new board. We came in. If someone had said, go back and check the minutes from 2 years ago, really? Like, that's going to happen? So I'm just trying to understand what is in place so that this actually gets revisited, because the idea of changing permanent requirements without anything in place to ensure that actually happens is just a little bit concerning.
I understand that concern, because boards do change, executive directors change. However, I do believe that, you know, because the department itself is well aware of this change and does not want it to be a permanent change, that this is something that will not be forgotten. I believe that. I do believe that.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments?
Follow-up question along the lines of, so now you've piqued my curiosity in this issue too. And I was not at the last meeting, so I'm sort of picking up on some of the obviously I read the regulation, but picking up on some of the points of interest. My understanding is that the changes, and please correct me if I'm wrong about this in any way, were influenced by the idea of necessity in the current sort of environment of you know, so it's definitely triggered by the moment. To Whitney's question about sort of inherent processes and procedures, I just want to drill down that there's no process that is inherently within the PSB for this to automatically come up. It's just a confidence in the intentionality of the way things operate that it likely will.
That is true. I don't think that there is a specific, we don't have specific statutory requirements that regulations be revisited at any particular time or on a particular schedule. We do have a common understanding that the schedule is 4 years, but there are, because this is a board and committee process, sometimes things do get stalled for a longer period of time. And but there is nothing specifically in statute about how the particular regulations or how often they are revisited or whatnot.
In my experience with the PSB has been, I've always been impressed at how often the evaluation process does come up for these things. I mean, often, sometimes there are some real significant, well, we better look at that. And a lot of times it's things that say, no, this is an improvement. That's just prudent. And we were intentional about looking at our regulations to see where there were opportunities to make improvement. So that experience gives me amplifies your point about the confidence, I think, in terms of how the process, how I've observed it working. And one last question, you know, and certainly tell me if you think it's a fair question or not, is, you know, do you foresee any adverse impacts on students and the delivery of you know, world language teaching that would be, you know, palpable if this regulation is not revisited in 2 years?
So personally, I would say that I do not. This is a particular, the University of Delaware has asked for this because they do have students who are affected in this way. The vast majority of language teachers actually come to us from other means, and the proficiency requirement is not as big of an issue as the fact that they are not trained teachers. And so most of our world language teachers are language speakers who do not have teaching experience or teaching training. They're coming from alternative routes or things of that nature. I do believe that the number of people who this would affect would be small each year. And certainly if it sunsets, and honestly, even if it didn't sunset, I believe that both Maryland and Pennsylvania have what we would be moving to as a proficiency target for their world language teachers. We're not, it's not out of the realm of how do you say it? It's not out of the realm of what we need to do in order to get world language teachers. We're not doing something that other states have absolutely never done, if that makes sense. Using an intermediate high rather than an advanced low. However, it's not where Delaware wants to be, because that is something with the World Language Expansion Initiative, we are trying to get students to become advanced low by the time they graduate from high school. And, you know, if the requirement for teachers is intermediate high, that is a conflict. I mean, that's not where we want to be, you know, in the long term.
I appreciate that context. And I think I'll further say your perspective on this is super credible because of your, you know, my knowledge of your orientation in education. So I will defer to that. So thank you.
Thank you. That it is. Can I ask one more question on that?
Absolutely.
And actually, two more. Sorry. So when we lower it, will look like the states around us. So we were higher than the states around us.
Yes, at least two of them.
Okay. And then How often do you raise the bar versus lower it? I'm just thinking about the appetite for that in 2 years. Like, is that something, I mean, just from our perspective, I feel like we've had a lot of conversations about the praxis test being very difficult. And you know, so I'm just curious in terms of the appetite and the environment in 2 years, is that something that actually would be feasible?
I don't know if I can answer that question with any type of a certainty. All I know is that we are and have been. World languages has been a critical shortage area since I came to Delaware 10 years ago. It continues to be one. I don't know the answer as to what it would be in 2 years.
I mean, I think it's safe to say that having high standards for certification and teaching in any state is, you know, it's sort of the goal, and especially was not too long ago during Race to the Top. We saw a lot of our certification requirements and measures, they were raised at that time. The problem is we have a significant teacher shortage, and our teacher pay, comparatively speaking to other states, is not where it needs to be, i.e. a new compensation committee that is being formed through legislation that will address compensation. So I guess my point is, it's easier to have a really high standards in a small state surrounded, you know, by other much larger states if, you know, your compensation was that much higher that you're like really drawing teachers to your state. But that is not the case. And so when you have a teacher shortage like this, I don't think it's uncommon, you know, for this, the Professional Standards Board to take a look at praxis and other certification requirements and say, we might need to make some adjustments here. The only other piece to the president's question regarding, like, we should have a formalized process for just tracking, like, over the course of the next 24 to 48 months, what is due up in terms of regulation revisiting. I mean, that would be very, you're so organized, Lene. I'm sure you have it for other things. Just, you know,
I have it for this too.
If you were to ever leave us, I would worry that we would possibly miss something, but having a process for tracking exactly where we are, I think, is paramount.
I mean, I do have a process for tracking, and I do have a chart, and we do visit that at this Professional Standards Board meetings of what is coming up in the next year.
That's certainly.
And so, I know it will be on my calendar for sure.
Now, I have to say, I appreciate all of your questions or your responses to my questions and others, because it kind of bothers me to make something permanent when it's not meant to be. But I appreciate your responses. Thank you. Okay. And I know I've monopolized, I'm sorry, I try not to do that. Any further discussion? Okay, is there a motion on the table with respect to Regulation 1565, World Language Teacher?
I move that we approve the Regulation 1565 as proposed.
Lo Fink, second.
Any discussion? Ms. Honor, if you could call the roll.
Mr. Birmingham.
4.
Ms. Pfeiffer.
Yes.
Mr. Lo Fink.
Yes.
Mr. Rushton.
Yes.
Ms. Sweeney.
Yes, motion carries. Okay, and thank you. I really do appreciate the dialogue, made me more comfortable, particularly the fact that we were higher than all the surrounding states. Regulation 1532, middle level mathematics teacher for action.
The PSB seeks the consent of the state board to approve 1532, middle level math teacher. This regulation adopts the new praxis test, which was rolled out in September of 2021. The current praxis test will sunset in on August 31st of 2022. There are The only other changes in this regulation were statutory. We did actually go through a process. I think we published this regulation 3 times. There were some other significant changes that were being attempted that did not pass the Professional Standards Board. And so the regulation is very much just an update in language and then also adopting the new praxis test.
Any questions or comments from board members? Okay, if there are no questions or comments, is there a motion on the table with respect to Regulation 1532, middle level mathematics teacher?
Madam President, Lofink, move to accept the updated Regulation 1532, or middle level mathematics teacher.
Thank you. Second, anyone?
This is Wally Rushden, I second the motion.
Thank you. Any discussion? Ms. Honor, if you could call the roll.
Mr. Brittingham.
Yes.
Ms. Pfeiffer.
Yes.
Mr. Lofink.
Yes.
Mr. Rushden.
Yes.
Sweeney.
Yes, motion carries. Next on the agenda, also for action, Regulation 1557, technology education teacher.
The Professional Standards Board seeks the consent of the State Board of Education to approve 1557 technology education teacher, which is now going to be technology and engineering education teacher. The changes in this regulation reflect the revision in the standards for the field to include engineering. And so the main substantive changes in the regulation are to include engineering in the title and then also have an updated definition of what technology and engineering education is that reflects these new standards, which were, I believe, approved in 2019 or 2020. Are there any questions?
Any questions from the board? There are no questions. Is there a motion on the table with respect to Regulation 1557, technology education teacher?
Madam President, move to accept updated Regulation 1557, technology education teacher.
This is Wally Rushden, I second the motion.
Thank you. Any discussion? You can call the roll.
Mr. Brittingham.
4.
Ms. Pfeiffer.
Yes.
Mr. Lofink.
Yes.
Mr. Rushden.
Yes.
Ms. Sweeney.
Yes. Thank you very much. Okay, so the next one is just for information. Regulation 1553, driver education and traffic safety education teacher.
The amendments to this regulation are to update the language in accordance with all of the regulations. In addition, the Ed Associate for Driver's Education, Mr. Mike Wagner, also did some due diligence regarding the course requirements for this regulation. If one is already a licensed teacher, there are 21 credits that are required for this certification. Oftentimes, however, though, if you are already a licensed teacher, you will have taken many of them. There are 6 particular credits that are required for certification as a driver's ed teacher. And there are, I do believe there's one other course that is required as an elective, but 21 overall if you are not a driver's education teacher, but you are also required to be a licensed educator. And so, and with that comes the student teaching and the bachelor's degree. And so we do not have driver's education teachers in the state of Delaware who are not licensed educators. Are there any particular questions about any particular part of the regulation? I can go into more detail if you'd like.
Mike Wagner here.
I was wondering if
you have any questions.
Oh, he's in the room. Wonderful.
He is in the room. Thank you.
I did not see him. Wonderful.
Any questions or comments from board members? We have an expert in the room. No? Okay. I'm sorry. I've sat here for hours.
I enjoyed the dialogue.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Again, for all the explanations, my questions this evening, and as always, such good answers. So thank you for that. Okay, so the next we have on the agenda is just an update on upcoming regulations.
Yes, so you all have the list available to you. I did want to highlight a couple of things that aren't on the list. The IAA is in the process of updating their regulations. They are splitting out regulations into new sections to make them easier to update. So, for example, right now they have information about officials and officiating fees in their big long regulation on high school sports. That's one that they'll be separating out, so it's its own thing, so they can kind of revisit as needed. They do expect, last I talked to Ms. Polk, they expect to publish those for public comment as of June 1st, which means they'll be posted throughout June, and then we'll go to the DIAA board for approval and then to you. So possibly that they will come to you in July or August. So just wanted you to be aware of that. They do have a number of issues that they are putting forward, a number of issues that they've been working with the Public Integrity Commission on over years, actually. And they do expect a number of public comments to come in on those. And like I said, probably at some point this summer, they will come in front of you.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Hahn? At this point in the agenda, we have time set aside for public comment. This is public comment only on regulations. Opportunity to sign up for public comment on regulations was available via email prior to this meeting. If you did not sign up and plan to provide public comment on regulations and are logged in via the URL, please type in your name, organization, and comment topic into the chat box now. If you are only participating via phone and wish to make verbal public comment, please log in via the meeting URL. And I would just note, the board doesn't respond to questions or engage in a dialogue with those offering comments during the board meeting. Do we have anyone signed up for comments on regulation? No. Okay, great. So.